So I'm just trying to clarify exactly what we mean when we say the LSAT is easy.
I think the LSAT is easy is short for the LSAT is easy when you do it our way.
Hello and welcome to episode 444 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. I'm Ben Olson. With me is Nathan Fox. We're the co-founders of LSATdemon.com and the LSAT Demon Daily podcast. Be LSAT famous. You can share news and ask questions on our website. That's thinkinglsat.com. Coming up on March 18th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Chris, one of our favorite teachers at LSAT Demon, will be teaching the final passage, and that's free, right? That's for anyone.
Yep, free for anybody. Just go to lsatdemon.com/free and register. That's an advanced level reading comprehension class taught by Chris. If you've never had any classes from Chris, I think you'll be in for a pleasant surprise. You'll have a good time. Hopefully you'll learn a lot. LSATdemon.com/free to sign up for that free class on March 18th.
Excellent. All right, let's jump in. We have tips from a departing demon. The departing demon in this case is Tatiana. What does she say?
So first, some numbers. She did subscribe to LSAT Demon Live for a while. Her first practice test was 153, which is a great place to start. Her best practice test with us was a 165. So that's a 12-point improvement. We think probably she could have gone even higher than that, but some people are happy with that 165. That's what I need to do to get to where I need to go. And the interesting part, I thought, was her note here. We ask for tips when people are on their way out the door. What advice would you give to other LSAT students? And Tatiana says, keep showing up and don't give up. Ben and Nathan are right. The LSAT is easy if you let it be. Read accurately and ensure you understand the material prior to reading the question stem and the answer choices. Four of the answers are wrong, and only one perfectly answers the question. So pick that one. And you can chuckle about that advice, but it is true that the four answers are demonstrably wrong. The one right answer is demonstrably right. And if you just slow down and focus on really understanding what you're reading, you can find this place where the LSAT is easy. And that's how it feels once you get to the level you're trying to get to. So anyway, I wanted to thank Tatiana. I mean, not to say... We've had a lot of internal debate recently, Ben, about this idea that LSAT is easy. I don't want people to get the wrong impression that you don't have to work hard at it. Tatiana did work hard at it. She was a student for over a year. She studied for a total of 289 hours. She did 7 full practice tests. That by itself took 17 hours. She did additionally 7 sections of games, a couple sections of reading comp, 9 sections of logical reasoning, and she spent a ton of time drilling. She did 257 hours of drilling. So 300 logic games, over 100 reading comprehension passages, and almost 3,000 individual logical reasoning questions.
Yeah, that's a lot. And I would say, too, that these hours might be a little bit misleading. This is going to change because we've recently started tracking time in review, but these hours right here don't include review time.
Oh, that's so just hours taking the questions themselves. Oh, and yep. She could have spent at least as much time reviewing as she did doing the actual questions. You know, some questions she probably doesn't review at all, but other questions, it took her 2 minutes to do it and miss it. Mm-hmm. And then she reviews it for 30 minutes potentially. So yeah, there could be hours and hours and hours on top of this. Maybe she put in 500 hours or 750 hours or 1,000 hours of work over the course of a year or more, but she did find that place where the LSAT is easy. What more do we want to say about that?
Well, I think the internal debate started, right, because someone said, hey, I don't think the LSAT is easy, and I... I guess I'm empathetic to that viewpoint because what is something that's easy? Something that's easy is something that you can just go do and it doesn't, you know, impose much of a challenge for you or whatnot. And the LSAT is challenging, or I mean, people have to put in a lot of work to get better at it.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to clarify exactly what we mean when we say the LSAT is easy. I don't outright say that's wrong, but there's something about it that feels like it could be misunderstood.
Yeah. I think the LSAT is easy is short for the LSAT is easy when you do it our way. And
when
so,
you do it our way, and you still have to, there's still a lot of work though that has to take place.
Sure.
Right.
That's fine. I mean, you know, like law school is not going to be easy. Being a lawyer is not going to be easy. Relatively speaking, though, as far as like the intellectual lift of it, people think it's a lot harder than it actually is. And the Kaplan's and the Princeton reviews of the world, it's almost as if they intentionally try to make it seem as hard as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give people the message that I get it, that you're struggling with it right now. And make no mistake, you're going to have to work hard. But the intellectual lift of reading this sentence is not actually that difficult. And reading this argument, if you take it one sentence at a time and you pay attention and you read a little slower, a little more carefully than maybe you're accustomed to, eventually you're going to see, like, it's going to just kind of pop into focus for you where, oh, all right, I understand. Here's your evidence and here's your conclusion. And that conclusion doesn't really follow from those facts because, and then you start making common sense objections.
Mm-hmm.
What about this? What about this other thing? How do you know it's not like this or that? And when you find those objections, you're already answering the question before you've even read the question, let alone the answer choices. And so, you know, part of it too, Ben, obviously, like some percentage of it is communication, entertainment, sales, right? Like you have to communicate in a pithy, catchy way with people. And mm-hmm. so nuance doesn't really play in a snippet.
Yeah.
It's real hard to find a two-word explanation that encompasses all of that that I was just talking about. But that is what I mean when I say the LSAT is easy. Mm-hmm. That, you know, all these gimmicky strategies, any focus on speed, now you're making it hard for yourself.
Yeah.
If you would just slow down and read it carefully and just engage with, well, it says this and then it says that and then it says this weird thing, but that weird thing doesn't really seem justified by these things. What's going on here? You think it through and you just start to see like this clarity, this vision where you're just like seeing right through the test. And that is how it feels for the people who make these huge improvements, right? I mean, I think on the other end of it, students do come out saying, oh, yeah, it's actually easy.
Yeah. I think the analogy might be similar to seeing the Matrix.
Yeah, for sure.
It takes work to get yourself to the point where you can see it.
Yeah.
But once you do see it, you're like, oh, wow, that's all it is. It's just simple and I can control it. But there's no doubt about it. There's work to do to get there.
Yep. And never said there wasn't going to be any work. Not saying it's going to happen for you overnight. Many people do take months or even years to prepare for this test. We think it's worth it because there's tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line. In terms of scholarships, there's also, you know, the whole entire legal career that you're going to have after this test.
Mm-hmm.
And the LSAT positions you for the right school and the right kind of launch trajectory for that legal career. All that stuff is going to take a bunch of work.
Yeah.
Intellectually, though, if you insist on the idea that the LSAT is hard, then it's going to be hard for you. If you can accept the idea that it says what it means and it means what it says, and you just have to take the time to really really read it carefully and maybe read it a couple times, be a little bit more patient with it, then you can realize that the intellectual challenge of it is just not actually that high.
Yeah. So let me say a few things and see what you think about this. So when we're saying that the LSAT is easy,
yes,
we're saying several things at once. One, we're saying that the LSAT isn't as hard as a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people make it out to be, right? And that making it more complicated, more difficult than it actually is harmful.
Right.
So don't make it any harder than it is.
Right.
Don't think it's any more complicated or tricky, right? Based on some formal logic
or technical, right? Like, I'll give you an example, which is sometimes we see students who learned lessons about the sufficient condition and the necessary condition and the contrapositive and diagrams and all this shit. And we're looking at a logical reasoning question with them, an argument, and and they read the argument and you're like, well, what do you think of that? How do you feel about that? What do you think about that argument? Is that a good argument? Is that a bad argument? And they start going like, well, this is sufficient for that. But this was necessary for this. And then they're drawing a big diagram and I'm looking at it and I'm going, okay, one, it doesn't even have conditional statements in there. So you're like seeing things that aren't even there. You're like trying to force this template onto something when that thing is not, just doesn't even fit with what you're trying to do. Two, there's just like the common sense objection here is, how do you know Mr. Tanish didn't steal those diamonds?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Tanish was the host of the damn party. It was at his house. It was his guest's diamonds who are missing.
Yeah.
How do you know he didn't do it?
Yeah.
And it like has nothing to do with all this technical shit. It's something that like a sharp junior high kid watching the mystery movie might have been like, I think it was Tanish that did it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like
overcomplicating what's right in front
of you. Right. Yeah. So when I say the LSAT's easy, I am saying don't overcomplicate it. That's one of the things that I'm saying.
Yeah,
sorry for the
don't overcomplicate. No. Yeah. This is what we want to clarify. So
okay.
So don't make it any harder than it actually is. That's not to say that there aren't things about it that require you to slow down, as you've said multiple times, think about it carefully.
Sure.
Because there's something about it that you're not understanding that doesn't have to do with technicalities. It just has to do with the fact that maybe they wrote the sentence in a convoluted, abstract way. And you have to learn to slow down, break down sentences into smaller parts, think about what that means, maybe learn words you don't know. These are all things that take time and work, but the LSAT is solvable.
Yeah.
It does make sense when you put in the effort to figure these things out.
Yep.
So we don't want people to give up because they just think it's arbitrary. Right. Yep. How many times have we talked about that too? People see an answer and they're like, yeah. This one, this one's not really right. No, it does. Yeah. There's just something you're missing. You have to dig maybe into the text a little bit more to step back and eventually understand it.
Yeah. Because at every level, even people who are scoring 175, at every level, at least half of your mistakes are from simply misreading things. Mm-hmm. I was in class yesterday and it's like, it's not even fancy vocabulary. It doesn't even have to be that convoluted of shit. It's just that you forgot that as a lawyer, you're supposed to read all the words, not some of the words, all the words.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so like I'm in class yesterday, right? Double Black Diamond, teaching expert level logical reasoning. There was a question that really gave people a hard time. And the reason why they missed it is because they just didn't read the damn question. The question in this case said something like, which one of the following, if assumed, would require Jack to act in the way he did? People gloss over it. They see assumption maybe, and they go, oh, it's an assumption. I'm looking for a missing piece or some bullshit like assumption technique that they have that isn't really that effective. But the thing that they missed is that it says explicitly in the question, which one would require Jack to act in the way he did?
Mm-hmm.
it's a sufficient assumption question. Yeah, it's asking it's you which force, one.
Yeah.
Which one is going to force this particular conclusion?
Yeah.
And yep. Everybody missed it because they misread it. They saw, maybe they saw the word required and they went into some necessary assumption analysis.
Yeah.
But without even knowing what a necessary assumption question is versus what a sufficient assumption question is, if you just read those words, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which one of these would require Jack to act the way he did? Oh, one of these is going to force Jack to act the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
And without even knowing anything about what a sufficient assumption question is, no LSAT theory required, you just find the one that forces Jack to act the way he did. And that's the right answer.
Yeah. So you have to read correctly to know exactly what you're looking for. If you don't know what you're looking for, of course, you're not going to find it. And then unfortunately, what happens, right, is people then start turning to tips and tricks. And wait. So the correct answer here is worded strongly.
Right.
Okay. So if I see another question that says required, maybe I'll pick an answer that's worded strongly, and the Kaplans of the world reinforce this notion that there are these like insider tips.
Right. And and students will think like, well, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be looking for here. You know, throw up their hands. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing here. I don't even know what I'm supposed to be looking for. And it's like, okay, well, will you read the question one more time? They're like, out loud? I'm like, sure. Yeah, let's read the question out loud one more time.
Yeah.
All the words of it, not just some phrase from it, but all those words.
Yeah.
Which one would require Jack to act? Oh.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I like for 15 years, I've just been telling people, would you read that one more time? Just read it. Nope. Try again. Just read it again. Because it tells you what it's looking for. The question makes sense. It's asking you a question to which there is an answer. That answer, by the way, is on the page. It's right there. It's one of those five. But if you don't read the question, you just dive into the answer choices, then you're just comparing a bunch of wrong answers to each other. But you don't even know what question you're supposed to be asking. So just slow down. Calm down. Like, okay, so another thing that I mean when I say the LSAT is easy is that when it seems hard, you're probably doing something wrong. Like if the intellectual challenge of it seems overwhelming, well, then I bet you didn't read it really very well. Because it's telling you, like it gave you a bunch of facts or it gave you an argument. Then it asked you a question and the question just read all those words because they're asking you something specific. And when you realize what specific question is actually being asked, then you'll see how only one answer can possibly answer that question.
Yeah. And you know, right there, actually, I think is where I agree so much with the phrase, the LSAT is easy. Once you understand, it's that understanding process, right? That I think can take time. There are instances where you can say, hey, just read it again and it clicks. And there are other times where people really have to read a sentence, read it again, figure out how to break it down into smaller parts.
Sure.
And let it sink in. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, lawyering is, it's gladiators of the English language, right? You're not going to be a very powerful lawyer if you don't have a powerful command of the English language. And so it is going to be a struggle for some people. Maybe English is your second language. Maybe you were educated in a different country. Maybe you didn't read a lot when you were a kid. Maybe you always struggled with a college level reading classes, English classes and stuff like that.
Or you're a native speaker and you've been taught a bunch of incorrect strategies, right? Like skimming,
right?
Which just invites you to come up with other means for determining what is being said.
Right, right. But it's just not a test of arcane knowledge. It's not like it's something where you have to have this you don't have to have a whole lot of like theory on board. If I can, and again, it is at least half of what I do is just telling people, well, okay, you think it means one thing, but if you read it again, it just doesn't mean that. it means something else.
Yeah.
So, you know, And maybe you consider yourself to be strong at English. Mm-hmm. And maybe you are compared to most people. But when we take the LSAT, we're not comparing ourselves to most people. We're comparing ourselves to all the other English language specialists in the world who all think, oh, I'm going to go be a gladiator of the English language.
Yeah.
And so you do have to consider the words on the page a bit more carefully than maybe you're used to. I am convinced, though, that if if you just take your time with it, and that might mean, you know, one sentence at a time, one word at a time, really stay present and break it down, break the pieces and parts. Sometimes that sentence is really long, convoluted. Take your time. Think it through. Rearrange it in your head to make sense of it. But once mm-hmm. you make sense of it, you'll realize that they're just never saying anything that's all that complicated.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Well, to wrap up this discussion, I would add one more thing, and that is that once you can decode what they're actually saying, you translate it into words that make sense to you, and you can clearly see what is said on the page, like you said, right? So many questions just become painfully obvious. You're like, yeah. Oh, that's the question, that's the answer. There are occasions where maybe some rule of logic, very basic rule, just like if-then statements or something, you're just missing it, and then, or part to whole, you just never thought about that before.
Yeah.
You may need to learn some of those things, but they're so obvious too once those are explained. And that's when you unlock so many questions, because every question that tests the same logical concept just now makes sense to you.
Totally. Yeah. You might have to take your time with it, but if you're going to be successful on this test, I think that you eventually see what we mean by the LSAT is easy. Okay. Should we move on?
Yeah, let's do it. Next. So this next one is from Lucy. The subject is law school is saying they don't negotiate scholarship. They don't negotiate in scholarship letters. Okay. Hi, Ben and Nathan, a law school admissions content creator that pops up in my social media feeds recently posted a video saying that some law schools are starting to specify that they do not negotiate scholarship offers in their offer letters. He advised not trying to negotiate with any schools that explicitly state this.
So you just let them win?
Yeah, you just throw.
Okay. That is your final price. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure.
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah. Sounds good. Let me see if that works for me or not. He didn't name drop any specific schools, so I'm not sure how accurate this information is. But I was curious to see if you two had heard of this and what your take is on it. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely, Lucy. First of all, this is totally unsurprising. This is probably step one in how to negotiate. My offer is non-negotiable.
The second they made you an offer, it was a negotiation. I mean, the fact that they have an application process is a negotiation. You're already negotiating. You showed up saying, hey, I think I want to buy this product at a decent price or whatever. I think I might want to buy this product. When they send you their offer of admission with or without a scholarship offer, That's a starting point for a negotiation. And if they say we do not negotiate scholarship offers, you could accept that. You could say, oh, shit. Yeah, OK, that's their final offer for real. Or you could figure out some other way of asking for more money and just don't call it a negotiation.
Yeah, that's the secret, right? You don't say, hey, I want to negotiate this. You say, hey, as you've suggested before, I want to talk about some concerns I have.
Yeah. Can we talk about I'm very concerned about the financing. Is there any way we could meet to talk about my concerns? Negotiate. I'm not negotiating. No.
Just want to work this out, figure out a mutually agreeable solution.
Yeah. It's not surprising that there are law school admissions content creators out there who are hawking this advice. A lot of people in this business are kind of in bed with the law schools, it seems, where it's like they're just part of this whole big, they really like the they really are about selling the dream to people. Like, oh, yeah, don't worry so much about the price. Just, you know, law school is great. We're going to get you in. If we can get you in, then that's great. That's a huge success for you. That's whatever. I just don't. What's the downside, Ben? If someone says we don't negotiate, what's the worst that's going to happen if you come back and say, oh, can we talk about it, though?
Yeah, they would say no. And you're asking for more because it wasn't good enough. So it's either no or no. So nothing's changed.
Right. There is no, like, they take away the offer from you. So this law school admissions content creator, whoever they are, what's the downside? Like, why, you know, they're so, oh yeah, don't even try. Well, why not?
They're going to be offended.
Yeah. Right. They might be offended. And it's like, maybe this particular law school admissions content creator is worrying about his or her reputation with the law schools. Oh, I worked with so-and-so and so-and-so helped, you know, I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's really hard to say what this content creator is thinking, but when it comes to the school, it's ironic because they do so much, right, to befriend you, make you feel important, and then you never end up really talking to those people ever again. So
worrying about the admissions office?
Yeah, no. Exactly. And then so worrying about offending them really needs to be not on your radar. What needs to be on your radar is, okay, how much am I going to pay if I go to this school? And what are my chances of success given my likely success as a 1L and a 2L and a 3L at that university?
Yeah. And if you end up withdrawing your application from the school because the price isn't right, that's part of the negotiation too. Because when you try to withdraw your application, they always could come back with, oh, actually, someone today dropped, you know, they decided not to take this offer. So just today, there's new funds that opened up.
Yeah.
We've heard that before.
We'd love to let you be the first one to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Or you withdraw your application and they say, oh, sorry to see you go. And then the next cycle, you reapply to the same school, maybe with a higher LSAT score.
Yeah.
Well, then you're not accepting their offer last year was part of a negotiation on the subsequent year's offer.
Yeah, they're going to have to realize that if they come back with the same offer, they run the risk of you walking away again.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's the harm in saying, I understand that you don't negotiate your scholarship offers, but I'm not going to go to your school at that price. I can't do it for me, my family.
I'd love to. You can be very nice about it. I want to go.
I have these other offers.
Can't. Yeah.
It just doesn't make financial sense for me. Now, if they want to stick to their policy of not negotiating scholarship offers, then they can do that. And that's a strategy that they might have.
Yeah.
But other schools might bend a little bit on that, especially once you demonstrate your willingness to walk away. How do we know that it's not just their policy to put we don't negotiate scholarship offers as a first step of the negotiation? And then as soon as you say, well, I have this competing offer, they might go, oh, sure. Yeah. Let us reconsider that.
Let me get back to you. I got to talk to someone higher up.
It's not a negotiation, though. Right. Because, I mean, negotiation makes it sound like, oh, OK, so me and you, we're going to sit down and we're going to like move toward the middle.
Yeah, we're going to hash it out.
They're not doing that. But if you tell them, I'm sorry, I would love to go to your school, but I just can't go to your school at this price. The negotiation is still open until they then come back and say, nah, for real, that's the best we can do.
You know, as we're talking about this, I have to have this thought in my head that probably the best negotiators make it so that the other party doesn't even think they're in a negotiation.
Right.
Right. It's just a conversation.
It's a conversation. Yeah. Yeah. Negotiation has a little stink on it. I don't know. And so, yeah, we can just use any other term. Mm-hmm. By the way, that's what lawyers would totally try to do. All right.
Yep. Cool. All right, we got two emails here about reading comprehension. The first one is from Jess. The subject is fourth RC passage in 5 minutes.
For reading comp, I've been doing time sections for about 2 months now, and I consistently reach the last passage with only 5 minutes left. How should I attack this passage with the time constraint? For the other passages, I spend at least 5 to 8 minutes reading, and then I answer the questions, but I don't have that time for passage four. My current strategy is looking for the blue highlight context questions and try to answer them based on surrounding sentences. This isn't the best. Of course, it's not the best because you don't understand the main point of the passage, which you always need to know. Jess says, this isn't the best, but I don't know what else to do. My graded section without including passage four is usually -3 to -5. Ooh. Maybe I should abandon the fourth passage altogether and go back to bookmarked questions. Let me know what you guys think. Thanks, Jess.
Okay, yeah. For right now, you want to abandon the fourth passage and focus on getting the first two passages. 100% correct. -3 to -5 on three passages is not good. That means you're missing 1 to 2 questions per passage.
Yeah, or almost a full passage worth of questions, right? Sometimes there's a passage that only has 5 questions. If Jess is missing 3 to 5 questions on three passages, she's missing half or a full section, sorry, half to full a passage worth of questions. Yeah. So at that level of accuracy, you know, Jess probably thinks she's doing pretty well, but that level of accuracy on reading comp is actually not that great. Yeah. And so those 5 minutes, you know, I don't think she should be bookmarking questions. I don't think you should be going back like that, Jess, but I think you should have taken more time on the first passage to get them all right and taken more time on the second passage to get them all right. Taking more time on the third passage, get them all right. And then if you just randomly guess on passage four, I think you've already dramatically increased your score, Jess.
Yeah, and then if you keep doing this, you're going to get better at reading comp. So there will come a day when you're getting -0 to -1, maybe -2, -1 on the first three passages.
Yep.
And you're knocking on the door of the fourth. In that case, guess on the remaining questions.
Yeah.
Then read passage four as if you're going to do it for real. And you'd be surprised. Maybe one day you read it. It happens to be 5 minutes and you happen to have six. You can answer a couple questions solidly within that 1 minute.
Right.
So
just one more. I just really want to say, Jess, I don't think that you bookmarking or flagging questions as you go is a good idea because you're going to run out of time in the section. So I want you to just move forward, not backward. Get as close as you're going to get to the correct answer. Take time with each question. Get as close as you're going to get. Hopefully you're picking an answer that you feel good about. Then you move on to the next question. But there's no point flagging it. I don't want you carrying some, you know, you're tethered to that question. You got this like anchor on you. Your attention is being drawn back to that question earlier, you know. I'd rather you just build comprehension as you go through each passage, understand as much as you're going to understand about each question. And then when you've answered all the questions for that passage, you get to forget about it completely and just move on, turn your attention 100% to the new passage and those new questions.
Yeah, that principle applies not only to the questions, but also to the sentences and the paragraphs that you read as you go through the passage.
Yeah. Let me read this next one from Cassidy, Overcoming RC Fatigue. Hello, I graduated early with a BA and a BS and a 3.96 GPA. I started with the Demon in January of 2024 and have improved 10 points from 148 to 158 in the last month. This is all sounding pretty rosy so far.
Yeah.
I'm working full-time, but have restructured my post-work schedule to dedicate 3 hours a day to studying. Rain or shine, I always get it in. I'm continuing to make steady growth on my practice tests, but find that my stamina, specifically in reading comprehension, is causing me issues. I'm consistently getting correct answers for the first two passages and then start to miss questions on the last two. I start to feel mentally fatigued going into passage 3 and feel totally empty entering passage 4. I'm unsure of how to work on this skill. I'm an avid reader, BA in English, and currently a high school English teacher. So this feeling of reading fatigue is new to me. How would you suggest I can build my RC endurance? Are there things I should be doing outside of consistent drilling that could help? I don't think it's an endurance issue at all, Ben.
Reading the LSAT is different than a lot of other reading that people tend to do.
I agree. I just still don't. Yeah, I don't think it's endurance. I think that Cassidy, I would wager that Cassidy is trying to go too fast on reading comp. Maybe she takes her time on the first couple passages and gets them all right. At some point, I think Cassidy is turning her attention to the fact that she has 2 passages remaining, 3 and 4, and she thinks that she has to do all of them in order to get her best score. And she rushes a bit through the third passage. Next thing you know, that passage is really hard to understand. Cassidy then experiences fatigue. She thinks it's fatigue. What it really is inattention causing lack of understanding, causing difficulty now with this passage, because you're just not actually comprehending it. You can call it fatigue, I suppose. I just think you're biting off more than you can chew.
I have a similar theory that I think is related, and that is the fact that she's focusing on doing 3 hours a day, rain or shine. To me, so first of all, there's the issue of, okay, is 3 hours too much? For some people, it's not. For some people, it is. I'm not saying it's too much for Cassidy, but this idea of I do 3 hours a day, no matter what,
rain or shine,
makes it sound to me like she's much more focused on the quantity of work she does rather than on the quantity or quality. Mm. And for that reason, she's probably bringing that same thing into the section. It's about finishing the section as opposed to about doing fewer. But yeah. Wow.
Cassidy, you're a badass, and congratulations on all of your achievements so far. You're going to be very successful in this business of the LSAT. There's no reason why you can't get into the 160s in the next month. There's no reason why you can't get into the 170s eventually. But you got to accept the idea that, like, I think you're letting the perfect be the enemy of the good here. Your 3 hours rain or shine, some days it would be better for you to get some extra sleep. Cut that down to 2 hours or 1 hour and go to bed on time.
Work out, whatever it is. Life is, I'm impressed by the discipline, but I'm afraid it's at the cost of not being flexible and focusing on the real goal, which is learning.
And more specifically on the reading comprehension, you got to accept the idea that you can score higher without doing all the questions. Because your accuracy, I bet, right now sucks. It's not great, not if you're scoring 158. Your accuracy is pretty weak here, Cassidy. Mm-hmm. And so you're experiencing that as fatigue, but what's actually happening is you're just not paying enough attention. You're trying to do all 4 passages so that you can get your 175 right now. Instead, you should be doing 3 passages with accuracy so that you can get your 165 right now. And once you can do that, you'll realize the LSAT's easy. It makes sense. You're a good reader, Cassidy. You've got a BA in English and you're an English teacher. You can read everything that the LSAT is ever going to ask you to read. You just can't do it all at once. So read one passage at a time, then read one question at a time. Make sure you feel as good as possible about that answer. It should click. It should feel right to you. Because I said this earlier, I want people to be building understanding. Even as they're answering the questions, you should be building understanding of the topic that's being discussed. And it's real easy to build misunderstanding. If you try to go a little bit too fast, one of the questions is difficult to you. By the way, the first question is almost always the main point question. How often have you seen people miss the main point question and then miss like four other questions in the passage. Well, that's because if you missed the main point question, it's not just that you didn't understand the main point of the passage. Now, your choice for that incorrect answer on the main point question, now you think that's the main point of the passage. So now you're building a misguided understanding of what the passage actually said, leading to a cascade failure of other questions that you're going to miss. Now, even less comprehension of the passage. Now the questions get really difficult. And I'm out of energy. I'm tired. Man, this is fatiguing. Yeah, well, it's only fatiguing because you're not doing it the right way. And if you had just slowed down 5%, you would comprehend more. You would get fatigued a lot less or not at all. Imagine, Ben, imagine how fatiguing it would be to teach one high school English class. Let alone like all day, every day. Teaching high schoolers.
Wow.
That's hard. That's so much harder, Cassidy, than what you're actually doing on the LSAT reading comp. On the LSAT reading comp, you're going to read a poorly written passage about a topic that you're probably not that interested in. But you can learn something. You can at least see the various perspectives. You know, a lot of times it's just a nerd fight. You're kind of standing on the sidelines watching as one historian attacks another historian for doing bad academia.
Yeah.
Right. That's what half of these passages are anyway. And they're fighting about like the underlying subject matter you don't really care that much about. But at least you can kind of watch the nerd fight. Okay, this guy says that, she says this in response. Okay, I got it. And then the questions just kind of answer themselves if you actually understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that that's very taxing.
It's 15 to 17 sentences. I mean, think about that for a second, Cassidy, compared to how much reading you probably do elsewhere, right? So,
yeah.
That's one passage.
Yeah.
Okay, well, cool. Keep us posted. Tell us what happens. The next one is from Lauren. The subject is reapply or go now? Question mark. I already feel like the answer is reapply, but
yeah, reapply, Lauren.
Next question. Okay. Lauren says, hi, Ben and Nathan. I applied this cycle straight out of undergrad with a nearly perfect LSAT and a perfect GPA. I'd love to know what those actual numbers are, but didn't get into the schools I was aiming for. However, because I followed y'all's advice and applied broadly, I have a full ride and a stipend to Wash U. My question is, should I reapply next cycle with a year of work experience or take the money and run? The reason I'm hesitant to attend now is because WashU's employment numbers make it seem like only the top half of the class gets high paying jobs. I know you guys say to be patient and know that law school will always be there, but does that advice still apply if you have a full ride offer?
Yeah, you can do better, Lauren.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, by the way, if you want to talk to an actual WashU undergrad, law student, Chris, who's teaching that class on March 18th, the one that we talked about at the top of the show, March 18th, 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern. That's Chris's class on reading comprehension called The Final Passage. Go to lsatdemon.com/free. But Chris is a 1L at WashU. And so if you want to ask him for his perspective, that would probably be a better source than us. Does it surprise you, Ben, that only half of the class, top half of the class, is going to get a high paying job at a school like WashU?
Yeah, that's how it works for those schools.
Yeah, it's not surprising at all. That's just how it is. I mean, WashU is not in the top 14. You're not a shoe-in for any kind of high prestige, high income job if you go to a school like that. That said, you're going to be there on a full ride and a stipend. So you're probably pretty baller. You know, like the people that are paying tuition at WashU, those are the people that need to worry. The people that are there getting a stipend, one, you're not paying anything. You're actually getting paid. Mm-hmm. Two, the reason why they're paying you instead of you paying them is because you have a nearly perfect LSAT and a perfect GPA. You're good at school. You're good at the LSAT. You're good at English. Like, this shit's going to be you know, I'm not saying, again, what does easy mean? Well, it ain't breaking rocks, right? You're going to go, I think you're going to kill it in law school. I think you're a great bet to kill it in law school. So if you decide to take this offer, go to Wash U, I think everything's going to work out fabulously for you. I still think you should reapply, though, because get better offers next year. Wash U probably will make you the exact same offer. Maybe you end up going to Wash U 1 year later, or maybe you get into one of these dream schools that you really want to go to, Harvard, Stanford, Yale.
Yeah.
For those kinds of schools, you know, Lauren did say she applied straight out of undergrad, and I have a feeling that that might be what's holding her back at some of the top schools. They would like people who have a little bit of real world experience, real world perspective, know a little bit more about what type of law specifically they are interested in.
Yeah, I'd also love to know your LSAT score, Lauren, and your GPA. You said nearly perfect LSAT, but the devil's in the details here. The difference between a 174 and a 176 can be quite significant at the top schools.
I would want to push back on perfect GPA as well. I mean, a perfect GPA, as I understand it, is a 4.3.
3? Yeah, yeah.
All straight A's in every single class would be a perfect GPA. If you had a 4.0, that's barely the median at Yale, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, sorry. I wonder if a perfect GPA is actually 4.33. For some reason, I have that number. But either way.
That could be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to look right now at the, I'm going to LSATdemon.com/scholarships, and I'm clicking on Yale's 509 report just to confirm. Yeah, the median UGPA at Yale is 3.96. Their 75th percentile last year was a 4. It says just 4. It doesn't say 4.0. It says 4.
These funny reports.
And that's strange because I thought it would be higher than that. I'm going to take a peek at Stanford. 3.99 on the 75th percentile. I'm going to take a peek at Harvard. 3.99, 75th percentile. Chicago, 3.99. Yeah, I mean, 4.0 is good. Don't get us wrong. But there are above 4.0 GPAs in play. So I wonder how perfect that perfect GPA really was.
Yeah. Lauren, let us know what you decide. We're curious. And hopefully you can talk to Chris. That would be awesome.
I wonder what Lauren's personal statement looked like. I'm not offering to actually read it. Don't get me wrong. But I wonder, you know, what type of stuff did Lauren talk about? And how does Lauren come off in that document? Does she look like somebody who is going to kill it in law school and, you know, make the school proud? Or does she look like somebody who hasn't necessarily thought it through? You know, maybe she's like just giving a bunch of personal opinions about right and wrong. There's a lot of ways that you can kind of tip your hand to show that you don't really know what you're getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious whether like her personal statement makes her look like a doer and someone who's just undeniably going to be successful in this field, or whether she just comes off looking like any other 21-year-old with stars in their eyes.
Yeah.
I would try again next cycle. I would apply broadly next cycle. I would definitely reapply to Wash U. If anybody asks you why you didn't take their offer or why you're reapplying, just say it wasn't right for you last cycle.
Yeah. By the way, you said apply broadly. How many schools is that? Because that's another thing that was a little ambiguous in Lauren's email.
I've said various different numbers throughout the years. It's like more than you think. <It's> kinda, like, why not? Why wouldn't I understand it's a lot of work. I understand that it requires some budget to pay the application fees. But other than that, what downside is there to applying to more schools? I mean, I think at least 10.
That's the exact number I had in my head. And I was going to throw out. My minimum is 10.
At the very fewest, I would
I don't
say
feel
10.
Like you can get enough offers
right.
that are good if and you're not either that or you're shooting too low. You got to shoot right. high enough to get some potential higher schools that might be a little bit of a reach, but hey, maybe you can get an offer from them. You're not doing that if you're not applying to 10 schools. But
yeah.
some people do more. I mean, yeah, it's a cost thing, but geez, even 20 schools, it's like somebody's going to come in with something amazing and you use that with other schools or you go to that school or whatever.
It's just, yeah, it's a demonstration of how like you value yourself in the market.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a podcast yesterday that was talking about with or without you energy. It's good to give off with or without you energy. Like, not will you please help me with this project that I'm thinking about starting. Rather, I'm starting this project. I want to know if you would like to be involved.
With or without you. Yeah.
Okay. I'm doing it. Do you want, are you going to join or not? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And not to be a dick about it or anything, but just if Lauren only applied to Harvard, Stanford, Yale, and Wash U as a backup, then yeah, she didn't give herself enough opportunities. And if she had invested more time, invested more money, applied to 15 or 20 schools, I mean, that seems outrageous, but hey, apply to all the schools in the top 14 plus Wash U, UCLA, Georgetown, all, you know, like out, just outside the fringes, USC.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's like, it's easy to come up with. And if someone said, I actually just decided to apply to the entire top 30, I'd be like.
Makes sense.
Honestly,
five. It does. I mean, you don't know what those schools are going through. You don't know right. the randomness
oh,
that's at play.
Like, people get some hired. People get fired.
Yeah.
Arizona is apparently going bankrupt because they lost $250 million or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know. Sorry, I interrupted you.
We just don't know what the different, like, some admissions officer could be looking at your application at a higher ranked school, and the dean comes in and says, hey, we need more people from the West Coast. We don't, right. We're down. And they're like, whoa, this person from the West Coast.
Right.
They got good numbers. Let's take them.
Yeah.
And it just, or, you have no clue what's going yeah. on.
Or, you know, some like they do a lot of time, especially the really high level ones in the admissions offices. They see themselves as like these chefs, you know,
mm-hmm.
oh, I'm
curating,
I'm brewing together a special mix of, you know, my students in my class, which bullshit if you're admitting 400 people, by the way. But anyway, I would believe you if your whole class is 70 people, maybe. But anyway, they, you know, that is how they see themselves in a lot of cases. And just who knows? Like, well, last year we had a lot of athletes, and this year I just was hoping that we could get a few more musicians instead.
Yeah.
And then it's like Lauren happens to be a competitive cellist or whatever. And she yeah. was in the, you know, she was in the symphony in school, and she didn't think it was that big of a deal because it was just a volunteer, whatever. But now she has that on her interests, on her resume or whatever. And like, I mean, because otherwise, what explanation is there for the student who calls me? This was 10 years ago, but, you know, they're like in tears because they got denied by Berkeley. Then 5 minutes later, they get admitted to Harvard.
Yeah.
You know, and if Lauren just didn't even apply to enough schools to give herself those chances, then yeah, we just don't know what those outcomes could be.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Enough of that.
All right. This last one is from Morgan. I think it's you.
On episode 442, you guys discussed that you doubt Howard is a great school if you want to go into big law. I just wanted you guys to know the reason Howard is a good law school for big law is because they get a lot of recruitment from firms with diversity quotas. So if you're black and wanting to go into big law, Howard is actually a really good school to look at from what I've been told by black law school graduates because of the amount of firms constantly recruiting there. That's Morgan. Morgan is currently a law student at UT.
Okay.
That's a reasonable explanation. We haven't fact checked that at all, but I suppose that could be an explanation for why Howard tends to have it. You know, it just has on episode 442. We talked about it, but it has way higher big law placement than a school of its ranking should like a school that of its LSAT and GPA profile shouldn't have that high of Big Law rankings or Big Law placement. So why does it have that high of Big Law placement? Okay, that could be an explanation. Thanks for writing in, Morgan. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, let's end with word of the week. This one's from our very own Abigail. Thank you, Abigail, for sending this in. She said that she encountered this word through Merriam-Webster's word of the day. Opprobrium,
I would say.
Opprobrium. Okay, thank you. Do you know what that means?
I think that opprobrium means like criticism, chastisement. It's like if I'm doing this, if I'm giving you the like shame thing.
Okay. The shame finger.
The shame, the fingers of shame. If I'm giving you that, I think that's opprobrium. Huh. Am I right?
I don't know. I haven't looked it up. It's interesting too, because she says, I knew what it meant only because I remembered the word opprobrious from this RC passage. I haven't looked at that either, but I don't remember that word from that passage. So.
Well, this might give us a, okay, I'll give you a little context from the actual LSAT.
Okay.
There is no difference between these things other than that those in power use the opprobrious term plagiarism when the work in question emanates from those whom they dislike.
Ah, so it's definitely throwing shade on. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's this. It's criticizing, it's judging, it's whatever. And very interesting that like it's really pretty easy to get it there from context. Now, that's not the exact definition of the word. The exact definition of the word opprobrium refers to very strong disapproval or criticism of a person or thing, especially by a large number of people. For example, they're going ahead with the plan despite public opprobrium.
Strong disapproval. Okay.
It's like if you get canceled. That's opprobrium.
Mm. Do you want to use it in a sentence of your own making?
One who applies late to law school, narrowly to only a few schools, and or without their very best LSAT score, will receive opprobrium from the Thinking LSAT podcast.
Boom. Wow, we'll end it there.
All right, wrap it up.
Be LSAT famous. Please ask questions or share news with us at thinkinglsat.com or on socials at LSAT Demon. If you have questions about the LSAT Demon, email help@lsatdemon.com. You can also check out our other podcast, LSAT Demon Daily. That was episode 444 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. Thanks all y'all for listening. Nice knowing you. Don't pay for law school.